Good morning. Here we go. It's just the three of us. I'm Jordash.
I'm David.
I'm Neil.
So here we go. What we're going to do today is look at a chunk of the community rule scroll from Cave 1. That has been called the Two Spirits Treatise. What we'll do to start, well, first we'll say prayer, and then what we'll do to start is we're going to read this text, and then we're going to compare it to stuff that's similar in John, first of all, and then Colossians. The reason why John is because the closest connection that the Dead Sea Scrolls makes in terms of terminology and ideology is with the Gospel of John. That's where sort of the heyday of comparative study is. And Colossians, just because there's also a neat constellation of similar things on what we're looking at, so that'll work out just fine. Here, Chuck. So, I'll just say a quick prayer to get us started. God, it's a fantastic day, fantastic morning, and weather is great. Just enjoying the last few weeks that I have here in the country before moving to Switzerland. And it's been great to spend time with family and friends here. And this morning we're going to look at some Dead Sea Scroll stuff, particularly the community rule. And our request is for you to please give us, fill our minds, fill our spirits with your spirit of understanding so we can be very attuned to stuff and learn stuff. What else? And help us to be filled by your spirit of love to make a positive change in this world. And we trust you because you are the one who can make beauty out of absolutely anything. Somehow that's how powerful you are. In Jesus' name, amen. Mm-hmm. All right. Who wants to read in a nice, relaxed pace, loud voice, this entire treatise? Danny, perfect. Do you want to read?
Sure.
We're going to read this whole thing and, do it at a relaxed pace.
Read this
loud, loud voice. Yeah. The English. We'll talk about the English later. Take your time. Take your time, loud voice.
A text belonging to the instructor who is to enlighten and teach all the sons of light about the character and fate of humankind, all their spiritual varieties with accompanying signs, all their deeds generation by generation and their visitation for afflictions together with eras of peace. All that is now and ever shall be originates with the God of knowledge. Before things come to be, he has ordered all their designs so that when they do come to exist at their appointed times as ordained by his glorious plan, they fulfill their destiny, a destiny impossible to change. He controls the laws governing all things, and he provides for all their pursuits. He created humankind to rule over the world, appointing for them two spirits in which to walk until the time ordained for his visitation. These are the spirits of truth and falsehood. Upright character and fate originate with the habitation of light, perverse with the fountain of darkness. The authority of the Prince of Light extends to the governance of all righteous people. Therefore, they walk in the paths of light. Correspondingly, the authority of the Angel of Darkness embraces the governance of all wicked people, so they walk in the paths of darkness. The authority of the Angel of Darkness further extends to the corruption of all the righteous. All their sins, iniquities, shameful and rebellious deeds are at his prompting, a situation God in his mysteries allows to continue until his era dawns. Moreover, all the afflictions of the righteous and every trial in its season occur because of his angels' diabolic rule. All the angels allied with him share but a single resolve, to cause the sons of light to stumble. Yet the God of Israel and the angel of his truth assist all the sons of light. It is actually he who created the spirits of light and darkness, making them the cornerstone of every deed, their impulses the premise of every action. God's love for one spirit lasts forever. He will be pleased with his action, with its actions for always. The counsel of the other, however, he abhors, hating its every impulse for all time. Upon earth, their operations are these. One enlightens a man's mind, making straight before him the paths of the true righteousness and causing his heart to fear the laws of God. This spirit engenders humility, patience, abundant compassion, perpetual goodness, insight, understanding, and powerful wisdom resonating to each of God's deeds, sustained by his constant faithfulness. It engenders a spirit knowledgeable in every plan of action, zealous for the laws of righteousness, holy in its thoughts, and steadfast in its purpose. This spirit encourages plenteous compassion upon all who hold fast to truth, and glorious purity combined with visceral hatred of impurity in its every guise. It results in humble deportment, allied with a general discernment, concealing the truth, that is, the mysteries of knowledge. To these ends is the earthly counsel of the Spirit to those whose nature yearns for truth. Through a gracious visitation, all who walk in this Spirit will know healing, bountiful peace, long life, and multiple progeny, followed by eternal blessings and perpetual joy through life everlasting. They will receive a crown of glory with a robe of honor, resplendent forever and ever. The operations of the spirit of falsehood result in greed, neglect of righteous deeds, wickedness, lying, pride, and haughtiness, cruel deceit and fraud, massive hypocrisy, a want of self-control and abundant foolishness, a zeal of arrogance abominable deeds fashioned by boorish desire, lechery in its filthy manifestation, a reviling tongue, blind eyes, deaf ears, stiff neck and hard heart, the end of walking in all the ways of darkness and evil cunning. The judgment of all who walk in such ways will be multiple afflictions at the hand of the angels of perdition, everlasting damnation in the wrath of God's furious vengeance, never-ending terror and reproach for all eternity, with a shameful extinction in the fire of hell's outer darkness. For all their ears, generation by generation, they will know doleful sorrow, bitter evil, and dark happenstance, until their utter destruction, with neither remnant nor rescue. The character and fate of all humankind reside with these spirits. All the hosts of humanity, generation by generation, are heirs to these spiritual divisions, walking according to their ways. The working of every deed inheres to these divisions according to each person's spiritual heritage, whether great or small, for every age of eternity. God has appointed these spirits as equals until the last age, and set an everlasting enmity between their divisions. False deeds are thus an abomination to the truth. Whereas all the ways of truth are for perversity equally a disgrace, fierce dispute attends every point of decision, for they can never agree. In his mysterious insight and glorious wisdom, God has countenanced an era in which perversity triumphs. But at the time appointed for visitation, he shall destroy such forever. Then shall truth come forth in victory upon the earth, sullied by wicked ways, while perversity rules. At the time of the appointed judgment, truth shall be decreed. By his truth, God shall then purify all human deeds and refine some of humanity, so as to extinguish every perverse spirit from the inward parts of the flesh, cleansing from every wicked deed by a Holy Spirit. Like purifying waters, you shall sprinkle each with a spirit of truth, effectual against all the abominations of lying and sullying by an unclean spirit. Thereby he shall give the upright insight into the knowledge of the Most High and the wisdom of the angels, making wise those following the perfect way. Indeed, God has chosen them for an eternal covenant. All the glory of Adam shall be theirs alone. Perversity shall be extinct, every fraudulent deed put to shame. Until now, the spirits of truth and perversity have contended within the human heart. All people walk in both wisdom and foolishness. As is a person's endowment of truth and righteousness, so shall he hate perversity. Conversely, in proportion to bequest in the lot of evil, one will act wickedly and abominate truth. God has appointed these spirits as equals until the time of decree and renewal. He foreknows the outworking of their deeds for all ages of eternity. He has granted them dominion over humanity, so imparting knowledge of good and evil, deciding the fate of every living being by the measure of which spirit predominates in him until the day of the appointed visitation.
Thank you, Danny. So we've got 40 minutes to talk about this and to compare it to Gospel of John. We're also going to talk about the letter of Colossians. John I picked because, for those of you who have just arrived, John is the text in the New Testament that most gets compared to the Dead Sea Scrolls. So it just makes sense. Light and darkness, all that stuff, it's in John. Colossians I picked because it has some similar stuff and I wanted to take a look at it. Thing is, with 40 minutes, I never plan these things super precisely because I don't like lecturing. I'd rather dialogue. So I'm not quite sure exactly what to do. I think what I'd like to do is try to talk about just this text on its own for 10 minutes. Try to talk about it and the Gospel of John for 10 minutes. And try to talk about Colossians and John and it for 10 minutes. And we have 10 minutes at the end for first as a buffer because it'll probably go over, and second to sort of summarize at the end. But if we can just aim for that, you're free to say whatever you want, as much as you want. I'll cut you off if I think you're going too long or whatever. But basically, I like discussion. That's how I like to do things. So if you look at this text, first of all, I'll give you, say, a minute's worth of background on this text. This is a big chunk of column 3 and all of column 4 of the community rule scroll from cave 1 in Qumran. You well know the history of cave 1. It was found first. So all of the scrolls from cave 1 got published first. So people got the community rule and thought, wow, you know, this is great. And this chunk that I'm calling the treatise on the two spirits, there's other names for it, became a very profound theological statement. It is a profound theological statement in the document itself, but it became sort of the statement of the Qumran community in some sense, because it talks about this dualism of light and darkness and sons of light, sons of darkness, etc. However, that's kind of been turned on its head slightly, because there are other copies of the community rule that have been found, and some that don't have columns 1 through 4. And if you read columns 1 through 4, they are actually sort of their own thing. In column 5, it begins almost as though it's starting the whole thing all over again. Here, I'll read you how column 5 goes real quick. וזה הספר לאנשי היחד המתנדבים לשוב מכל רע ולהחזיק בכל אשר ציווה לרצונו, etc., etc. It begins, this is the book to the members of the community who have volunteered or who have been chosen to be part of it, etc. So when you say this is the book and you're starting in column 5, it makes sense that this might have been added, or this was an earlier thing and the other part was added. An argument made by Charlotte Temple is what I've heard her speak recently at a Dead Sea Scrolls conference at the Hebrew University, is that even though the copies of the community rule are more recent, that don't have 1 through 4. Her argument is that they're actually copies of an original scroll that didn't have 1 through 4. So even though they're later, they're actually preserving an earlier one. And so these columns 1 through 4 are added at a time where there is what she was calling commitment issues with the Qumran community. Because in columns 1 through 4, you all, in addition to this, you also have this thing where there are blessings and curses on people that aren't part of the community, blessings for those who are, but curses for those who aren't. And there's a special extra discussion about the person who was part of the community and left, and woe to them. So this is one of the arguments why this is actually added later. And the treatise on the two spirits would be added later because it would be a way to really sort of heighten the tension between us and them. And the dualism, and we're going to use that word in quotes, because dualism, strictly speaking, is when you have two equal powers. And we don't really have dualism at Qumran or anywhere in Jewish thinking at this period, because you have a God that is above whatever other powers. So strictly speaking, it's not dualism. But the dualism, so to speak, that we find in here is not all through the sectarian writings of Qumran. So it's not like it doesn't seem like it was the grain from which the entire tree sprouted from. It seems like it's something that has been added later. At least that's a new argument. I buy it without being a specialist in the area. That's what I think is happening. You find other types of, or expressions of dualism. For instance, in the war scroll, you have this vision of a future battle between the sons of light and the sons of darkness. But it's much more eschatological. Here, you have all kinds of things happening. You have somebody in their own heart. You're battling between the good and the evil spirit that's pulling you in different directions. And if God has foreordained that you're a bad guy, you're going to go more with the ma'ach koshech. And if God's foreordained that you're a good guy, you're going to go with sa'ach ha'olim. And the spirit of truth, as opposed to the spirit of aved, or deceit, or iniquity, or justice. So that's a bit about the history of where this is in the scroll and how this might relate to the community. Now let's talk about what Danny read. What strikes out to you? What sticks out to you about it? I'll take notes.
The Prince of Light in 320.
Yes.
I think that's, you're talking about John. What stands out is that.
Okay.
And 324, Sons of Light. There's something that's wanting the sons of light to stumble.
Yeah.
So in talking in this way, that there is a prince of light and there are sons of light, it also strikes me as humankind, you always need, walking, living in community, you need to nail down some do's and don'ts.
And they've got their lists here, don't they? Yeah, they do.
And say, okay, watch out now, there's these two spirits, and this is what the good spirit leads you to do, gentleness, kindness, which goes back to the fruit of the spirit a little bit, in 4:3,
mm-hmm.
which I know you're going to go there as well,
Yeah.
I would say that there was a real consciousness of the spirit world, supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something totally, totally not Jewish, and it's going to be another close to 800 years before Islam starts. But in Islam, you pray to the good genie and the bad genie, and I can see something like this would be a precursor even to something.
Yeah, and in rabbinic literature you have the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer HaTov, right? That are pulling you.
Yeah.
Very similar. Here what's interesting is that, and people have commented on this, how this treatise is not very coherent in a sense. I mean, it is, but it's got patches. Like, first it talks about God's created everything, and God's created these two ruling supernatural beings who rule humanity divided into. But later you get this interesting sort of anthropological or psychological discussion towards the end. Say 4:15 on, where it starts talking about, you would think from the beginning that really there's no difference between there's no difference among evil people. They're all evil, and the good people are all good, except for the fact that the Malach Hoshef is trying to make the righteous stumble. That's what you got in the beginning of the document. But down here, you see that each person is warring against these two poles, and depending upon how much they were given, if they were given folly or if they were given wisdom, they're going to make the right choices, and that's how they're going to be part of one of those two camps.
I can't find it, but it was somewhere in there. There was something that sounded a lot like predestination, where it says, like,
God. Oh yeah, the Ein Hashnok. Where is that?
God made these people to be evil, almost. Like, it didn't say that, but it was something like, it was like halfway, I thought, towards the end.
It's like 3:15, before things come to be, he has ordered all their designs.
Where?
Yeah. So that when they...
Yeah, and 3:16 as well. The Ein Hashnok, right?
Yeah.
What verse?
3:15.
Mm-hmm. And 16, the appointed times is ordained by his glorious plan. No one has times.
Yeah, is any impossible to change?
Where?
3:16.
Yeah, and they use the term as double predestination, where some are predestined to damnation and some are predestined to make it. Hey guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Okay. Anything else? Any other thoughts on this? I've got two quiet guys up at the front here.
What is this? Is from one of the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Yeah, this is from the Community Rule. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just came in his name.
Oh, good. Okay, excellent. Welcome. Yeah. In here.
Look. 4:23.
Yeah.
You already mentioned eschatology. Mm-hmm. Diversity shall be extinct.
Right.
Talking about a sending an age where.
It's yeah. It's finally going to be.
My spirit will be put down.
Yeah. And if, like a sick dog.
Just some of what we mentioned last night about how God made this good a good angel and a bad angel. He made this bad angel to lead some of you astray. There's. Yeah,
there's a real moral tension in who God is, a God that does this sort of thing. And it's interesting too, but where's the one, is this it? Yes, in 3:26 and 4:1, it shows that God loves the one spirit, right? Ruach Emet, and yet he despises the other one. But the interesting thing is God, according to the thinkers behind this text, has created both of these, yet he loves one and hates the other. So it's a very explicit and attempt to be comprehensive in how to deal with evil, But it creates some strange problems in understanding who God is, a God who creates things that he hates intentionally, not things that have sort of fallen off the bandwagon, so to speak.
So are you saying the one is Mashiach, Jesus, and the other one is Satan?
I haven't said anything. We're going to look at the Gospel of John in a second. We're also going to look at Colossians. All we're doing is looking at their own worldview with, from their own, you know, hopefully from largely their own eyes. Except my criticism there would not have been through their own eyes, of course. But basically, we're looking at the document on its own. Is a better way to say that.
Yeah, here's the, in 4:15, where it says all the hosts of humanity, generation by generation, are heirs to these spiritual divisions, walking according to their ways. The outworking of each deed inheres in these divisions,
mm-hmm.
according to each person's spiritual heritage, whether great or small, for every. And then, so they inherit the spiritual heritage. You don't really have a choice. And then God appoints these spirits as equals. So there's that dualism that you were talking about. He created these two spirits, and then according to this, they are very clearly of equal, I don't know, power or equal something.
That is that's a very good point. That according to this document, their view, God has created two equal powers, one of good, one of evil, which is like, you know, certain ideas in
yin and the yang company?
Yeah, in various different types of
Zoroastrian
worldviews, and yet neither one can get the better of the other until the end of ages when God jumps in and smites evil. So it's kind of like, do the best that you can. Do these things that are in these lists, make sure that you're part of the right group, but, you know, nothing's going to really change until the end of time. That's what this projects, right?
And when you say they, you mean the Jews? This is their scripture?
This would be a very small percentage of Jews. This would be a very small community that lived near the Dead Sea.
Which ones?
People like to call them an Essene group, yeah. And I don't see a big problem with that. This would probably not be representative of all Essenes, because they lived in cities and lived in different places, but this would definitely be the view of one group that had some extreme views and lived out by the Dead Sea. And didn't have anything to do with the temple, etc. Were very critical of the way that the rest of society was functioning. Okay, let's take a look at John, and we can't obviously read the entire Gospel of John, but let's somebody read the first 19 verses or just the prologue, and that'll whet our appetites and our palates, and then we'll hopefully remember other things in the Gospel of John that pertain to some of these themes that have come up. Anybody? Loud voice, nice, relaxed pace.
I can do that. Does NIV work?
NIV is great.
Sorry, I'm a little sick still. But in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning the light, concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to every man was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testifies concerning him. He cries out, saying, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me has surpassed me because he was before me.' From the fullness of his grace we have all received one blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but God the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. Now this was John's testimony when the Jews of Jerusalem sent priests and Levites to ask him who he was.
That's cool, yeah. That's good. A lot of common themes and vocab, right? Hmm. Let's shoot some at me. What are they?
I said earlier about the light.
Light, for sure. Light and darkness, huge. Mm-hmm. Huge difference there. I mean, not huge difference, but a huge thing that they have in common. Mm-hmm.
I was just noticing that we've read this before, but in the beginning was the Word, and God spoke, and it was done. So it was the Word in the beginning.
Yeah, that's a great point. And interesting, that's not something that we find per se paralleled in the other document. We do have that God is the creator of everything, but we don't have that God did approve speech. That's not something that's... What else do we find that are common between the Gospel and this document?
Why are you looking for commonalities between the two?
Come again?
Why are you looking for commonalities between the two?
Because we're studying the text.
Okay. And in this one, the light was created?
Light and darkness are created in that one. Okay. Yeah.
In this one, was the light created?
What I wanted to do first was just look at the commonalities first, and then we discuss the differences. Are you okay with following me on that one?
Okay.
All right.
A lot of what we've said, you know, we could even tie in with the spiritual heritage, you know, in this is 4:16. I guess in the book of John, I don't know if there's anything specific there, but our spiritual heritage, according to at that time, would be to be always doing the
The offerings.
The offerings, yeah. But the light came, the light, and the Word became flesh. I mean, this is going to help
you. I'll just bring up the reason, to go back to your question, why are we looking at these two texts? The Dead Sea Scrolls come on the scene, late 40s. Suddenly we know a lot more about some Jewish thinkers, some Jewish communities from that time. And we always want to understand the Bible in light of its cultural and historical context. This is absolutely crucial. Otherwise, we just import our own historical and cultural context. So this is a very important move to make. Now, amongst New Testament writings, the one that has the most commonalities or the most at least common vocabulary and usage of themes and ideas is John for the Dead Sea Scrolls. And this, what we've picked here from the community rule, is perhaps the most succinct articulation of a number of motifs that are shared between those two things. And we want to see how these things are common, how these things are different. This is how we look at sort of anything that we study.
There's light and darkness.
There's light and darkness.
And this light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can't comprehend it. So there's this concept that the darkness can't be won over. Almost, it seems like the darkness is darkness, and it will remain darkness. And there's light, and there's these two dueling forces. And the darkness isn't, almost sounds like the darkness isn't supposed to comprehend it. They're two opposites, and they're not meant to fit together.
Well,
he said in Genesis 1:4, and God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness.
Thank you. So this is an important point. Both of these texts are drawing on Genesis 1 and drawing on the creation, the background of the creation story in Jewish scripture. They're both pulling on it. They're both pulling on the light and darkness, but they're going different directions with it. And so we come back to now what is different. Mm-hmm. In the community rule, we have two things that are created simultaneously by God that are equal powers and that rule over humanity in two different groups. And eventually darkness will be destroyed. In John, it's different. It doesn't actually say that the light is created. It says that all things are created through the Word, and then it comes out and say the Word is in Him was the light. Was the life, and this life was the light. So it's sort of doing a lot of equal signs to get to, and then the darkness pops out of nowhere. Did God create the darkness? Was the darkness there originally? When did the darkness show up? It just sort of pops out of nowhere in the prologue, and the darkness has not understood it or overcome it. Katelaven, it can go either direction with that. But it's very interesting. It's still pulling on Genesis, but it's saying, this author is saying, whatever that darkness is, and wherever it comes from, and obviously later in his book he's going to talk more about this force of evil, the light is already, basically, it's already, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it or understood it. The light, it already triumphs. Quite a different perspective to what we find in the Treatise of the Two Spirits. Same interest in the creation story, same interest in light and darkness, same interest in how humanity is being divided, because also in the prologue to John you have those that, how does it go? Those that believe in him become children of God, not by human decision, etc., etc. But that others have light the darkness more. What verse is that? Can you find that for me? No, I transpose something from later on in the gospel. It doesn't say that they light the darkness more. That comes in another story later on. Here it just says...
You can check verse 5, it says it didn't comprehend the darkness.
Right, I was thinking more the world doesn't recognize him. And
I don't think it said that. It said Israel doesn't recognize him.
It says his own. It says his own, Ta'idia. And here, this is, everything has been created through this celestial being. So would it have to be all beings that he's created do not recognize him?
Going back to what Danny had said and seeing the differences.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that in the Qumran scrolls it says they're equal until the end. However, in that five, just reiterating what Danny had said, they're not equal. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness is not understood.
Yeah, they're definitely not equal here.
Not
yeah,
equal.
But we know a lot less about the darkness here. It's a mysterious thing that just sort of pops into the prologue.
But it's definitely a definite force.
It's like, a definite force,
which is like for most of the Old Testament. You don't have talk about darkness being a force that you have to contend with. Mm-hmm. It's just you just need to be righteous, and because God's there, but there isn't this like, but you got to worry because there's this other dark force that's also out to get you, and it's just.
And you can either go dark or light. It's all equal.
Right.
Yeah. In Proverbs, you have the two ways: the way of the wise and the way of the foolish, and you should follow. But it's not like there's a force that's trying to drag you down.
It's an animate spirit that's out to get you.
Yeah. It's performed. You can have something personified, like wisdom is personified,
right,
or the adulteress or whatever, but you don't have an actual, watch out for these evil spirits, make sure that you say this prayer before you go to bed at night or whatever.
In Genesis 1, verse 2, it says, "And darkness was upon the face of the deep."
Yeah, and I would say that in this sense, the Gospel of John is more like what we have in Genesis than the community rule. Also in Genesis, the darkness is just kind of there. We don't really know where did it come from. Did God create it? There's water there. The first thing that God creates is light. Yehi'o, Vayehi'o. And here, there's already darkness before he creates light. It's a very strange thing. It can be unsettling because it's not clear exactly how this all works. God's created everything, yet there's already something in the beginning. There's already water, there's already spirit hovering on the water before God creates something. The earth is already formless, there's already darkness, there's already tahom. But I would say that in the treatise on the two spirits, there's a more conscious effort to say, take a look at 3:15, right? There's a conscious effort to say that Me El Hadeot Kol Hove V'Nihya. Basically, everything that exists, God has created. V'Lifnei Hayotam Hekin Kol Machshavtam. And before they existed, He created all of their purposes or their ideas, etc. This is a much more top-down approach to understanding not only reality, but also Genesis, the tradition that we find in Genesis, etc. Okay, I'm going to pause on that. Now we're going to go to quickly summarize this, because we have to move. We have only like 12 minutes left. We're going to summarize this and then go to Colossians. And if we don't get to Colossians, I'm not going to cry, but I would like to. That's my personal preference. But let's do this real quick. 1 Q S 3:13 to 4:26, that's what we've been looking at. And this is John. And I hope that we get here. Colossians. Is this? Okay. I'm going to write down a few things. You tell me if it's the idea of one creator. Okay? I'll answer it because that one. I'll ask you only if I think it's really hard to get. Yeah, it's in both. They both have the idea of one creator. How about, is there some kind of supernatural agent in creation?
Yeah.
Nobody brought this up in our discussion. Interesting. That's already something quite different. And this is the very first thing that starts off the prologue in John, right?
Oh, can you vocalize agent in creation being?
I mean, verse 3. Panda via tui geneto. All things were made through him.
I see.
Right? There's one creator. They both accept that. But everything was made through the Word. Light and darkness. Yes, we both have that. So that's the same. That are both are created. We talked about that. Yeah, and here, probably no. It's not clear, but it's probably the case that darkness is not created by God, according to the prologue of John and the rest of the book of John. Is there an evil ruler? Here, yes. Malach Hoshek. In here, not in the prologue, but in the rest of John, yeah. I mean, if you look at, for example, 840, I'll just write them down. 844, 13:2 and 27, 14:30. These are ones where he talks about the ruler of this age. There is a ruler of this age, and he's going to get busted. So we have that same idea of an evil ruler in both of these documents, both of these texts. Is the evil ruler created? Here, definitely. Here, it's unclear. We really don't know in the Gospel of John. If we only had the Gospel of John to understand New Testament or early Jesus community thought, we wouldn't have an idea about that. We wouldn't have a clear idea. We might say, yeah, because it says, Panda via tui geneto,
But then next thing it says, all things were made through him in the prologue. But next thing it says, and the darkness out of nowhere could not understand him. So we would, it sort of, in both ways, it's not clear. Are there two? Oh, here, let's do this. Are there other evil rulers? No. There's just one. There's not an intricate system of demons and the cohorts of demons and so forth. That's not applicable. Are there two opposite rulers?
Yes.
Yes, here. And actually, yes, here. Because Jesus is portrayed as a king. It's very important to... He gets coronated on the cross, ironically, but he is definitely a ruler. And if you take a look at... Someone can read really quickly. 1633.
Of John?
Yeah. 1633.
I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world.
Right. And then if you also read Twelve, 27 to 33. Anybody? 12, 27 to 33.
Now is my soul troubled. John 12:27.
Yeah.
Now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour, but for this cause came I unto this hour. Father, glorify thy name. Then came there a voice from heaven, saying, I have both glorified it and will glorify it again. The people therefore that stood by and heard it said that it thundered. Others said an angel spoke to him. Jesus answered and said, this voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me. Keep going.
One more. Yeah, one more line.
This he said, signifying what death he should die.
So all those things are tied together. The prince of this world gets toppled at his death, and it's the moment of his glory, because a voice from heaven says, I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again. So this is, yes, we have two opposite rulers in a sense. They're not the same type, right? One is a human, as opposed to in the community rule. You have two angel-like spirits that are fighting. Here you have something that was a cosmic word that has become a human, and that is doing battle with this ruler of the earth. So, I would say there are two opposite rulers. It's not quite the same picture, but they are opposite. Are they equal?
No.
No.
In the first one, they are.
In the first one, they are, and in this one, they're not. And there is there a defeat of evil? I'm running out of space here. Is there a defeat of evil?
Yes.
Yes. Yes and yes. We can ask a whole bunch of questions about this defeat of evil, but I'm running out of space. What I'd like to ask are questions like when, how, etc. When?
Well, at the end.
At the end. At the end of time. All right. At the end of this age. How about here? When is evil defeated?
It's a continual defeat. Well, according to other parts, you know, there's the cross, but then the death is the last.
Just talking about the Gospel of John. In the Gospel of John, the cross is where evil is defeated. And it's exactly what we just read in chapter 12, 27 to 33. Glorify your name. I have glorified, I will glorify it again. he talks about that the ruler of this earth will be tossed down or thrown, tossed out. Yeah, I waked up yesterday hiking. And that he was describing his death. So all that is told before you get there. Again, the irony of the fact that he's defeating evil, the irony of the way that story is told, you can understand how anyone in the first century would go, this is a very strange story, very kind of ridiculous story, that the very moment that this person is being crucified as a criminal, one of the most, you know, inglorious deaths, he's defeating the cosmic powers of evil, or cosmic power of evil. Very strange. We're running out here, but destruction of evil. Is there going to be a destruction of evil? Because here it's defeated, and here it happens at the same time. Oops, at the same time. The Gospel of John is not that clear about when the destruction of evil will finally be. This has puzzled some people who compare the Gospel of John with the Synoptics. Because the Synoptics are very clear. They cross on the other side on the Mount of Olives and look at the temple, and Jesus gives this prophecy about what's going to happen in the end of days, and then finally he's going to return. John in chapter 14, the beginning of chapter 14, does talk about returning. He talks about building his father has many rooms in his house and come and get them and bring them there, but we don't really get discussion of how is this going to be. Obviously, they're going to a better place, so it's going to be better. But exactly how is this going to be better? He doesn't articulate that evil will be finally dealt. It's not its final blow, but dealt its final. It wiped out. Interesting, he didn't feel that need to do that. But that's what it is. Now, however, we've got 2 minutes left. So either we go till 10 to 11. And we read Colossians and we quickly do my checks and crosses, or we just say a final wrap up and we can it here.
It's Colossians.
Colossians, let's go.
Alright.
Okay, somebody read Colossians starting at we're only gonna read the chunk. Let's read from verse 9 to the end of chapter. Almost to the, it's 9 to like 23.
Chapter 1?
Yeah.
You want to read?
Yeah, go for it. Has anybody not read yet? Neil, you have not read yet. You want to? You got the three.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay.
All right. 9. For this reason, we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you, and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will and all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing him, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might according to his glorious power, for all patience and long-suffering with joy, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in the light. He has delivered us from the power of darkness and conveyed us into the kingdom of the Son of his love, in whom we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins.
Keep going. Always 23, I think.
He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things consist. And he is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he may have the preeminence.
That's pretty good.
For it pleased the Father that in him all the fullness should dwell, and by him to reconcile all things to himself, by him, whether things on earth or things in heaven, having made peace through the blood of his cross. And you, who once were alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now he has reconciled in the body of his flesh through death, to present you holy and blameless and above reproach in his sight, if indeed you continue in the faith, grounded and steadfast, and are not moved away from the hope of the gospel which you heard, which was preached to every creature under heaven, of which I, Paul, became a minister.
And please read one more verse, because we've got to get this verse from chapter 2, 2:15. Because if we miss that, we're missing something key to this study.
Having disarmed principalities and powers, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in it.
Triumphing over them. Right. Well, actually, you need 14 and 15.
Well, can I say my version?
Yeah. Can you read 14 and 15?
Okay. Having canceled the written code with its regulations that was against us and that stood opposed to us, he took it away, nailing it to the cross. And having disarmed the powers of authorities, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. Do we have one creator?
Yes.
Yes, we do. Do we have an agent in creation?
By agent, you mean God the Father, or
Jesus?
Yeah, it says in there that all things were made through him, right? He's the head of all things, he's the blah, 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 and all things were made through him. It's the same kind of thing we have in John chapter 1. That same idea is there in Colossians. Do we have light and darkness?
Yes.
Yes, we do. Right before we get this beautiful poem about Jesus, we have this thing about kingdoms of light and darkness. Are they both created?
Yes.
Tell me, why?
It doesn't specifically say, but it says everything is created by
you. You're right. So I'm going to say...
All things.
I'm going to say...
And then he goes through the list, like, whatever you can think of, if it's people, rulers, principalities, da-da-da, God made it all.
You're totally right. You're absolutely right. And even the words for rulers and powers, there are four words in Colossians 1:16.
Yeah.
It says, ite throni, so chairs, thrones, ite kuriotetes, lord-like powers, ite arche, other kinds of powers, ite exousia, authorities. And that the last two are also the ones in 2:15 that he triumphs over at the cross. So they have to be things that are created through by God through Jesus. However, the only reason why I say possibly or even probably...
It didn't because say it specifically.
Because it says the kingdom of darkness. And it doesn't say that he creates the kingdom of darkness. It doesn't say he creates all powers. And so it allows one to wonder, where did the darkness part of that come from?
Right.
Okay?
Right.
But you could be right. It could be that in this person's mind, actually that kingdom was created. That is possible.
Right.
But it still makes it weird because... Okay.
But it's where it's all, every Pentecostal preacher starts with that verse when he's about to, you know, pray that, you know, you don't have to fear evil things because God made them.
Yeah. You know? Right. Right.
He even made these little petty things. So you don't have to be afraid of those. I mean, and oftentimes the thought is that he created them while they were still good. They were good angels, and then they became bad. It's not that he made them evil as such, but
and
whatever. Okay.
No, I think it's a killer point. It's a super important point that I would feel upset if it went one way. I would existentially feel very disturbed if it went one way that God did create darkness.
Right.
But if it went that God just created the powers and then went dark, the reason why I...
So it's an important distinction, you're saying.
It's an important distinction. The reason why I feel like I can write this is because when we're dealing with the Gospel of John, we're dealing with someone trying to articulate a full story. And it's there. When we're dealing with the Treatise of the Two Spirits, this seems like this is a very conscious attempt to have a comprehensive and explicit articulation of their views. Colossians is not that. Colossians is certainly a letter that's an occasional letter to a church he'd never been to, and he's just sort of, he's putting stuff out there that doesn't appear, this thing about Jesus doesn't appear in any of the other letters. And so, it's not like this is a comprehensive or exhaustive explanation of his views about evil and worse. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's why I feel like in Colossians we have more freedom to put question marks. Not because of the length. You can have a short document that is intentionally trying to be comprehensive. Even if it doesn't give you all the details, it covers all the bases. Evil ruler. Does this have an evil ruler?
Yeah, a few of them.
Yeah, exactly. It has a few of them. It doesn't ever talk about an evil ruler if you read the whole way through. You can see that in a related letter in Ephesians 2:2, for example. You get this idea. So it's not far from the ballpark of this way of thinking, but it's not in this letter. It's not important.
What's he say there in Ephesians 2?
Can someone read it?
I don't know.
In which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world and of the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient.
Okay. So it's a clear ruler, just like in John.
That's the devil, basically.
That's the devil, yeah. Evil rulers in Colossians? Yeah. Are they created? Definitely. Are there opposite rulers? No, it doesn't seem like it here. It just seems like Jesus in Colossians is off on his own, and there are evil powers.
But he had to triumph over them. Wouldn't it imply a battle that there were opposing powers?
They are opposite, but not, I should say, two. The emphasis here, are there two opposite rulers, like the ruler of this earth, the ruler of this world, and Jesus, or whatever? No. Or like in community rule, Sav Ha'olim and Malach Hoshech. They're opposites. Bad Bevad, Nipalku, it says. Are they equal powers? No. Defeat of evil here? Yes, there's a defeat of evil. Where does it happen?
At the cross.
At the cross. Interestingly, that two authors or two thinkers that are usually put quite, you know, are quite different, John and Paul or the Pauline camp, are here bang on the same point that there's a defeat to evil by superior power at the cross at his moment of being. It's the irony again. He triumphs. A triumph is where you leave captive booty and people from a military expedition into a city in the main square. You walk around, you show that we just triumphed and we've got all this stuff. Jesus, according to Colossians, triumphs over all the powers at the moment that he's hanging on the cross, just like John has. Very, very similar way of thinking.
That's the same Greek word.
Triumph does not appear in John, but the idea is the same. It's in Nikes in one of the things that we read from John. That's it. All I want to say is that obviously the ideas of light and darkness were being thrown around or thought about in the first century and earlier, and also the ideas of that there are powers, good powers and evil powers, and that people are being divided into camps, etc. But the way that early Christian thinkers, and we've only had time to look at two of them, deal with this issue is very fascinating. They kind of push evil aside and say, I don't really want to explain, or I don't know how to explain the origin of evil. I do believe that here those powers were created, and over here not articulated. So there is some distancing from answering the question of the origin of evil, but there's certainly no doubt about how they come down with a resounding same note on how evil is conquered and when and where. Alright, thanks very much. Yeah.
That second, or Colossians 2:15, the triumph in there, that's the same Greek word they would use to describe Caesar's reigning.
Yes, that is definitely a triumphal entry. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The funny thing is that in another place, Paul describes how the apostles are beaten and crushed, and that Christ triumphs them through a city.
Oh, wow.
That is a very, very interesting use of the metaphor. I don't remember. I think it's in one of the Corinthians. I don't remember where that is.